So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight.
Listen to review,
right now, right? That's what you say. We get it by now.
This is not over. This is not over. Not a fucking long shot. They are four men. They are men. We have an entire locker room of men and one woman. So I don't care what it fucking takes, but Mount Rushmore is over and I will not rest until I see the put in the fucking ground.
Welcome, everybody, to a very special edition of Review Away. Mr. Ting is off in Las Vegas, where he's covering all of the UFC action that is happening this weekend. There are three events going on, including UFC 194 on Saturday night. So we are going back to review PWG from this past summer. And joining us is a man who wanted to hop in and do this review with us. He is WH Park. You know him from Japanese Audio Wrestling. WH, how are you?
I'm pretty good, John. How about yourself?
I'm doing very well. I'm always happy when we can coordinate with our slight time zone difference to bring our worlds together, and PWG is the reason for it this week. But I got to see you just a couple of weeks ago when you were here in Toronto.
Yeah, we met at a nice English-style pub. I got to eat some real, British food, I suppose, at that place. It was a nice place. It was nice seeing you, Wei, and Mao.
Yes, this was a place, this was Dan Labransky's recommendation. It was also very close to his work, so I think that played into the choice.
I don't think I've seen Mouth for like, maybe since before I left.
Oh wow.
So it had been a while. He hasn't changed at all.
No. Mouth has been very, very consistent. I guess, did you first meet him at O'Grady's or had you known him prior?
No, I met him at O'Grady's. When they were doing when he was doing the law with Jeff Merrick.
Yes.
And I met both of them. They were covering it. And I would sometimes call the law talking about like Japanese wrestling because I knew they both liked it. And so we kind of bonded over that. And I went to many shows with Mouth. He actually was the kind of like the gateway into like me starting watching Japanese tapes because he had a huge collection. As you well know.
And Mouth used to make compilation tapes. I remember this. They were called Dr. Mouth's Stiff History of Japanese Wrestling.
Exactly.
And I remember he had like this printout at O'Grady's, which is he just showed me this sheet of them. And I ended up buying a bunch of them off of them just to actually see all these matches of guys that I had read about but never had been able to see. I mean, this was like 2000. So yes, the internet was around, but it was hardly as prevalent and easy as it was to just access wrestling at that time. So
exactly.
Yeah, he was my gateway too, WH.
And like the thing is like he would get like, he would tape trade with other people. So his things were all like maybe third, fourth, fifth generation copies of these amazing matches. And it's not until recently that I started getting like much better copies of some of these matches I'd already seen just because like, oh, I love this match, but fucking hell, it's really hard to watch this copy I have from Mouth on VHS.
He told me there used to be some like this store by his house or something where he'd go and they would just always have VHS tapes of like the latest All Japan and just this just like little hole in the wall in the city, and I don't even know where it was. And I think that was one.
It was on Queen, I think. I think I know what you're talking about, because it was like there was a well-known kind of Japanese food store that imported a lot of Japanese TV shows.
That sounds right.
And actually, if you there's a store like that in north of the city, or on Steeles Avenue, like just east of Young. It's called J-Town. It's like a Japanese food store, and they also had like they do DVDs, of course. But like I would go in there sometimes, like oh, they got Pride, and they got like you know New Japan, All Japan. It's like it was really cool. But at that point, I already had like my sources, like people I would mail order from. So I didn't really need to get in that stuff, like just to rent. It might have been cheaper, but I wanted to have my own copies of like things. So, at that point, I had graduated to tape trading myself and to like buying directly from like the best sources of, you know, Japanese wrestling on DVD at that point. So,
do you miss that at all? That true tape trading experience? Because I can tell you as you know, a teenager, I remember making my first High Spots order for the J Cup, the 95 J Cup. And I mean, yes, you'd have to wait like 4 weeks, but the anticipation when that tape finally arrived, I mean, kids these days, WH, they just can't appreciate it.
I would just like go to my mailbox. Did it come in? Did my order come in? Oh, it's here. I miss like the commitment I could make to watching stuff, because it's so much easier now, but also it makes it so much harder to just sit down and watch it, actually. You know what I mean?
Like it's always there. There's no struggle. There's no work you've put into, you know, typing in an address, and there's your match, and it's there whenever you want it, and you don't have any necessary, gun to your head to have to sit down and watch it. You've invested nothing into this find, so to speak.
Exactly. It's a case of like I would get, I don't know, like 20 DVDs of like different promotions, and I would just take a weekend, maybe over 3 days. I would watch everything. I watch shows from start to finish, and I would know who all the wrestlers were in any particular promotion. I can't do that anymore, just because like one, I don't have the attention span. Two, it's kind of part of, I have to do it now, you know, for Japanese honor wrestling. I still do it. I still enjoy it. Don't get me wrong. But it was more fun, I suppose, back then.
Yeah. And for those that are maybe, new to, any of our shows, O'Grady's used to be, a place where we'd hold the Monday Night Raw parties. And for a time, we'd have Raw on the big screen and then Nitro would be on the smaller screens when they were going head to head. And that was fun enough. I mean, this was kind of at the peak in like 2000, 2001 and went on for a number of years after that. But after Raw would end, we would put on just some random wrestling, and 9 times out of 10 it would come from either WH or Mouth, and it would be some concoction of Japanese wrestling. And that's, I remember in 2003 where I got to see that Misawa Kobashi match when they had for the GHC title, which everyone was raving about, and that was just one of many. And here was a bar where tons of people would just stick around after, and you're watching whether it was stuff from mid-90s All Japan or any time period, and that to me was some of the most fun stuff, and usually was the stuff I would come away with enjoying more than Raw or Nitro, especially Nitro.
Well, it was a, like, I remember that particular match, Misawa versus Kobashi from Noah. I think I brought that tape.
I think you did too, yeah.
And I remember like people were like, "What the fuck is this?" And then afterwards, like, they're watching it and they're just like, "Oh, this is amazing! This is better than anything like you see in American wrestling." And I would always get a certain sense of satisfaction that, like, maybe I introduced people to, like, Japanese pro wrestling, you know?
Yeah. I wonder if Radar ever made the leap.
No, there was no Shawn Michaels type in Japanese wrestling at that time. He might, I don't know, Tanahashi now, I suppose. I don't know. I don't know who it is.
This guy Radar, who got the name because of his shocking resemblance to the guy from MASH, it has to be the only person in history that bought that god-awful Vince Loves Cock t-shirt and wore this thing with such pride on Monday nights. It was like the one place he could wear this. And for all I know, he did wear it in everyday settings. But
my favorite, I suppose, Radarism was he – because to a grave with some of my friends, and one of those was like Neil, and like Radar had this like huge man crush on Neil, and he would always come up to our table and say, "Hello, sir." That's all he would say. I just lose it. I would just start laughing. He's like, "What's funny?" I'm like, "Nothing. It's okay."
Oh man, the good old O'Grady's days. But yeah. We're now going to segue off to something maybe we would have watched over a month, maybe at O'Grady's, potentially. At least night three we would have. Night two of the Battle of Los Angeles from this past summer. Now, first of all, WH Head, you watched the first night already prior to watching this.
I did. I really liked it. I really loved the main event of that show, the six man, the Eurotrash versus Mount Rushmore 2.0. I really like European wrestlers these days. They're like, just to me, like that's just a hotbed of like emerging talent.
Yeah, it seems that it's just, there's so much great stuff going on there, and now they have a platform, whether it's, you know, with Progress Wrestling and their streaming service, and so much talent that they're bringing over for PWG shows. Even a little glimpse, I think TNA could really exploit that connection a bit further, but you're just seeing so much talent coming out of there, and certainly they were featured here on this particular show, and once again, they broke up the commentary for the first and second half. The first half featured Excalibur with Chuck Taylor, and I discussed this with Wade during our review of the first night, but why don't you just tell us your thoughts on the commentary, because I think that's one of the biggest strengths of PWG, in particular Excalibur.
Excalibur is awesome. I've been watching PWG DVDs for a long time. There was a point where I was like, loving PWG way more than Ring of Honor, and you know, like I was a huge Ring of Honor fan, and like I would say, like 2009, 2010 was just a banner year, because they just had all these guys who, before they would go to WWE, like and become big stars there, they were just like wrestling in PWG, and like guys like, you know, Bryan Danielson, Daniel Bryan, and like Claudio, and you know, Cesaro, and all these people. It was just like, it's just amazing. And just, and the Young Bucks were just starting, and it's amazing, like how they progressed to what they are now. I think PWG, even though they don't run as frequently as a lot of other independent promotions in America, they are probably the most consistently good, the consistently best promotion in terms of like the product they put out.
Yeah. I mean, given the success that they're having right now, I mean, there's so many ways you can look at it. It's like, this thing could be even bigger than it is, but then there's always the fallback that they have this great thing going right now. Why are they going to try and potentially break what they have working so well? I mean, are there certain elements that you would like to see change, whether it just be the accessibility of their DVDs? I mean, they're still in a process where you've got to order the DVDs. Are there any changes that are glaring to you for PWG and just anything around them?
I don't know. It has its charm. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I like the Legion Hall. I like the way it's shot. I like Excalibur on commentary. It's because like, he's one of the original PWG six, right? One of the six founders of PWG. So he knows everything about the promotion. He's one of the few guys who's still an owner of it. Still part of it, and he's such a funny person, you know. I can imagine, like, if I met him in real life, I could easily just like sit down with him and talk about not just wrestling, but like pop culture, like movies and comics and all kinds of things, and just be total best friends with this guy.
Yeah, and he's everything you want in a commentator. Extremely knowledgeable of the product, which is an understatement. I mean, this guy's an encyclopedia of PWG history, and just, it's essentially wrestling nerds together on commentary, which is exactly what your audience is likely going to fall under that category of. And it's never a case of the commentary overshadowing what's going on. They're always enhancing, always adding, you know, jokes that are actually funny and never going overboard with them. It's just a perfect balance that they have, whether it is Chuck Taylor or Chris Hero. And I find those two, as color commentators, they have their own distinctions as well. And you heard Joey Ryan on night one as well.
I think the thing with, you know, like in particular Chuck Taylor and Chris Hero is like, they're obviously like have a good rapport, like outside the ring with Excalibur. He's brought those guys in multiple times into PWG, so he knows them very well. He likes them, and so they have a really excellent chemistry. Like the thing, and I like Joey Ryan because obviously him and Excalibur have known each other for the longest of any of the commentary partners that he has. So they have that kind of, you know, chemistry and history together that they can play off of. I think the commentary there is fun. It's not obnoxious. Like sometimes I'll watch some indie shows and the commentary's just so, like, you know, I don't know, it's so obnoxious in the sense of like they try too hard. With Excalibur and the various people he does commentary with, it's just relaxed. It's easy to listen to. It's just like two people talking but the point of what they're trying to do is get the product over, get what you're watching over, not necessarily themselves. Inside jokes notwithstanding.
Yeah, I would go so far as to say Excalibur might be the most underrated play-by-play announcer in the entire wrestling industry, because he's never a name that comes up for people when it comes to the best pro wrestling commentators at a time when they're certainly not in big supply. I mean, outside of Mauro Ranallo, I mean, how many pro wrestling play-by-play announcers come to mind, WH, for you that you genuinely enjoy sitting down and listening to for a multi-hour broadcast?
Not that many, John. Not that many.
So there you go. We go into our first match with Marty Scurll, who TNA fans will remember from British Boot Camp, a finalist against Rockstar Spud, taking on Rich Swann, who has now been signed as Richard Swann by the WWE.
I never would have guessed that they would have. That's what his name would have been.
Richard. That's going to be the big change.
N now though? Because his name is spelled with two N's.
Yeah, that's always a WWE changeover. The amount of letters on a name. They're going to go the opposite route of Taz and eliminate a letter from him.
We also a third N. That would be revolutionary.
We also had Austin Grimes as the referee. He would have a very big night on tonight's show, and it took 0 seconds flat, WH, for us to get a Vic Grimes joke in by the announcers.
Yeah, that was a recurring joke, I suppose.
Great later on when Chris Hero thought he was just striking while the iron was hot on that one. Little did he know Chuck Taylor had just been doing commentary for an hour and a half. So the match begins with Skrull just jumping him before the bell rings, gets a near fall immediately, and this crowd, WH, immediately just felt like they were on another level from the night prior. They were just super hot from the start of this match and into a lot throughout this show. A lot of great stuff thrown out throughout this match. We had Skrull posing on the edge of the apron and then got super kicked to the floor. Then there was a back body drop with Swann rotating and landing face first on the mat. Then he would come back with a standing Hurricane Rana to Skrull off the second turnbuckle. I think there was a moratorium put on reverse Hurricane Ranas after night one and about 80 dozen of them. Swann went to the floor. There was a super kick off the apron, a reverse vertical into the ring to Swann. Then Swann is blocking the chicken wing. Swann connected with a super kick, the lethal injection with the handspring off the ropes into an ace crusher. And then Swann went for a frog splash, got a two count off of that. And Skrull gets up, grabs the fingers of Rich Swann and snaps them after Swann spits at him and just made this ugly noise. And here was like the easiest spot on the entire show. And it got incredible heat with the snapping of the fingers. And then Swann fires up with what were described as Vader strikes, hitting like his wrist to the side of the head. And then Skrull comes back with a tornado DDT and transitions into a chicken wing and submits him in 11 minutes and 21 seconds.
Yeah.
WH, match number one, your thoughts?
Fantastic. I gotta say, I like Marty Skrull a lot. Because I'm a big fan of like Zack Sabre Jr. And he and Skrull were tag team early on in their careers. They were called the Leaders of the New School. But it's amazing, like, seeing him now, because, like, his original character, he was called Marty Skrull. Now he's
yes.
a villain. And, like, he's got that fucking man bun thing going. But he actually makes it work. Like, when I was back in Toronto, I'd see people with that. I see guys with that, and I'm like, and stupid beards, and I'd be like, oh, fuck, it's D-Tag Central around here. But he makes it work. And I love this character. He comes to the ring wearing a fur coat. He's carrying that umbrella. Reminds me of the Penguin, you know, the Batman villain. for some strange reason.
He reminds me of what Adam Rose in his mind wanted to accomplish with first being the party guy and then ditching that to utter failure. And Marty Scurll is someone, I feel this is very much a reoccurring theme throughout this past year's tournament, is guys that have been on TNA's radar up close and personal, and they either have not been able to capitalize on them or have just let them slip through their fingers. And Marty Scurll would be right up there with me. I think there's so much British talent out there that TNA had a pipeline to, and that's a part of the world they do very well in. I think that would be a strong direction TNA could go in, looking at some of this talent. And Marty Scurll was there, essentially in their system, on their own reality show.
Yeah, it's just a lost opportunity. He's got so much natural charisma, and like I think he's someone that's, you know, despite his size, but if the WWE's gonna sign Rich Swann, I don't see why they wouldn't take a serious look at someone like Marty Scurll. Yeah, I really like this match. I'm not a huge fan of Rich Swann. There's something about him that, like, he's talented, he's really athletic, great high flyer, but just something I can't get into.
You hate those wings coming off of his tight. I know hate, on his trunks.
I fucking hate those wings. I do. They annoy the shit out of me. It's like when we used to go, remember we used to go see, like, UWA shows? And it's the equivalent of fucking Lionel fucking Knight wearing those fucking sweatpants. That's what those trunks remind me, like, in their own way, they remind me of those fucking sweatpants that kid used to wear.
Those, in hindsight, WH, those were some incredible shows that UWA brought. Here we were at St. John's Hall in the middle of nowhere, Ontario, where we're watching Jushin Liger and Ultimo Dragon and
Okada.
Okada, Austin Aries, and this guy's was in 2004. It was unreal. 2004, 2005, 2006. They had a great run, and unfortunately couldn't keep running. But yeah, we were mainstays there at those shows. But here we have Marty Scurll advancing, and then I feel the most polarizing match of the tournament. You either loved this match or you hated this match. It was Angelico and Jack Evans with our referee Rick Knox, and Angelico has this nasty red mark on his chest from the night prior, and Jack Evans is very much playing to the crowd here, yelling that this is a student of Negro Navarro, and he thinks he can beat a Heart Dungeon graduate. And Chuck Taylor is on commentary saying that Evans has spent too much time with Teddy Hart and has lost his fucking mind. And then we get the first incorporation of Dave Meltzer into a match, because Dave is sitting front row with his notepad, and Evans yells, "Write in your report that Evans carries the team," involving Evans and Angelico, of course, if you follow AAA. And then Angelico goes down to the floor, takes Dave's notepad, and writes down a message, which I can only envision what it said. Maybe he spilled the beans on Lucha Underground and a potential Televisa deal.
Who knows?
But nonetheless, the match then continued, or began, with a judo toss by Evans, and this was dubbed Mexican Judo. And throughout the match, we got lots of different comedy. Jack Evans just essentially getting into fans' faces. He took a beer from a fan, then started chugging it. The announcers are burying this. Like, this is just awful. He drinks the beer, breaks the Dixie cup over his forehead, and then he's acting drunk, but he avoids all of Angelico's shots and attacks him, including hitting a corkscrew headbutt. Then he goes down to his chest and hits this mule kick to the back of Angelico, which I can't do proper justification in describing, but it looked incredible the way he hit this so flawlessly. Angelico then landed a flying knee. Then Evans came back with a quebrada into a reverse elbow. Then Evans swept Angelico's legs out from the edge of the apron and hit a 450 off the apron to the floor. But Evans is selling his left knee after that spot. A flying knee then sends Evans to the floor. Evans stops Angelico from a dive over to the floor, and Angelico gets his knees up as Evans goes for a 630 splash. Then there's a gory special into a running border toss by Angelico. Goes for another one. This gets countered into a sunset flip and a jackknife cover by Evans. Then the lone reverse hurricanrana is hit by Evans, but they go into the ropes, and Evans looks genuinely frustrated here, that the referee is not counting. Then there's another border toss turned into a Hurricane Rana by Evans. Evans screams about the Karate Kid, does the crane pose, and hits a crane kick, pinning Angelico 17 minutes and 17 seconds. I am most curious, WH, what you felt about this match, and in particular, Jack Evans.
Well, like I did some research because I had no idea who Angelico was, but apparently him and Evans are a regular tag team. They're called, in Mexican, they're called Los Guerreros del Cielo, the Sky Blondes, which I don't know about that name. But I was surprised about Jack Evans because I hadn't seen him in a long time because I don't watch Lucha, I don't watch AAA. But it's great that he actually looks like a wrestler now, you know, instead of like when he first started in Ring of Honor in Generation X, he was, you know, doing like white b-boy. He was like an Eminem wannabe. So I'm really happy that he's actually decided to look like a wrestler now. I don't know. This match, I actually laughed a lot at this match. I was just like, couldn't believe some of the shit Evans was doing. Like he started like, and the crowd caught on like when he was doing the drunken stuff. He was like basically ripping off Jackie Chan's drunken master character, you know, from the famous movies he's done. And he did all of like these moves from those movies. And then he won this fucking match doing the fucking crane kick. He's channeling fucking Daniel LaRusso and Helico's like, you know, Johnny, you know, from Cobra Kai. And he beats him with this move. That's what I was like, wait, that's the finish? Okay. I was okay. I think matches.
I didn't hate this. I thought that this was so much different than any other match on this card that the crowd enjoyed it. And I thought it went a little long. I think this could have been a lot shorter given the way it was structured and so much comedy into it. But this was different. And on these kinds of shows, I liked how so many of the matches, none were like the last one, and this was certainly the case in that regard.
I didn't hate this match. It just kind of boggled my mind, though. And I gotta say, Chuck Taylor had the best fucking line of the night when he asked, why does Angelico have non-functional pockets sewn in the back of his trunks? I always wonder that about people. Why do you have back pockets sewn into your trunks, but you don't actually have, they have no functional use. It doesn't make your trunks look better if you have back pockets in them, you know.
Another fashion faux pas, this coming from Angelico in this regard. Evans then cut a promo afterwards and tells the fans that they're all full of shit. He's going to win this trophy to prove that their opinions are shit, and then tells the fans to go piss and shit and complain on the internet before shaking hands with Angelico. And he was done. That was his night.
Definitely, like, you know, commentators got it right. He's been hanging out with Teddy Hart way too much in his life.
Then for the furthest thing from that last match, we went into Chris Hero and Timothy Thatcher. And this is a match that I've never seen these two work together. I've heard about their chemistry in the past, especially WrestleMania weekend. So I was very much looking forward to this particular match. Thatcher is currently the Evolve champion, and Chris Hero comes out, he goes into the crowd as they're chanting for both here, and Thatcher is just stone-faced, staring down Hero. They bring up their history and Evolve on commentary and that this is their first match in PWG, and it starts so simple with both trying to get control of the ankle of the other, a lot of chain wrestling. Taylor then calls out people who simply bought Night 2 because of all the great reviews without buying Night 1, perverts. So they have to go by Night 1 as well, or else you're not a completist. Excalibur also brings up Josh Barnett working with Thatcher earlier in the day, this prior to Barnett's fight with Roy Nelson coming up a few weeks later. And then Hero starts landing elbows and then gives a middle finger to one of the fans. He looked genuinely pissed here at a fan yelling something at him. I don't know what it was, but Chris Hero momentarily looked like he was somewhat swayed by some fan yelling something at him.
Chris Hero likes to get distracted by the fans. This has been like something that's kind of like plagued him, I suppose, in his career. He did that thing with, you remember Merrill at a UWA show? He had like this verbal exchange with her. He had the best. Oh, he had the best line. It's on YouTube. If you can find it through the the mishmash of Chris Hero videos out there on the streaming websites. But he basically says she has hepatitis, like H through Z or something like that. Just hilarious. Anyways, yeah.
That is a good line.
It is a great line. And like, considering who is saying it to, I just kind of, I laughed heartedly when he had said that, because it's kind of true probably. But anyways, sorry. I love Timothy Thatcher. I've seen like a lot of his stuff on YouTube and stuff. He's just such an old school wrestler. Like, he's comes from that World of Sport tradition of, you know, and he's really, I think he's like the second coming of Billy Robinson. You know, why he's not in Japan right now, I have no fucking clue.
It's really, like, I've seen very little of him, but this guy is excellent. And they also brought up the trend amongst Thatcher, Drew Gulak, Biff Busick, and Tracy Williams not wearing knee pads. Like, these guys are young boys in the New Japan system, WH. I think just stupid not wearing knee pads myself, but they're clearly going for something here.
You know, I think it's kind of like this trend of people emulating like Gotch style, you know? Like, I think this is like in some way a kind of indirect showcase of like the influence of Minoru Suzuki, you know? Like, he doesn't wear knee pads, he doesn't give a shit, he doesn't need to, you know? And like, these guys are, I think, like, especially like, you know, if Timothy Thatcher's not a fan of Minoru Suzuki, I'll eat someone's fucking hat. You know what I mean? Like, he must be a fan of Minoru Suzuki. I bet you Drew Gulak is as well. Depends, like, these guys are wrestlers, you know? They're more like...
Yeah,
wrestlers.
That's what I was going to say. These guys aren't doing 450s to the floor like Jack Evans is. So, I mean, you can't necessarily look at it in the same way. But nonetheless, this industry is taxing enough. Let's not add problems to down the road for us.
Exactly. But like I said, I think if... Depending what kind of wrestling style you do, you can survive without knee pads. Minoru Suzuki is a perfect example of that.
Chris Hero connected with a bicycle kick into the corner and then posed for a picture in the crowd, just a 180 in terms of his fan interaction here in just a matter of minutes. Then Thatcher slaps Hero, drops him in the corner. Chris Hero sold this like he was knocked out and eventually comes to and kicks out at one. This might have been one of my most favorite sequences on this entire show because it was just it was so simple, yet it was executed so incredibly well. Like, this felt like this is exactly how someone would react if they were momentarily knocked out and even allowing the kick out at one. I just thought it was tremendous. Then Thatcher got knocked off the turnbuckle with another bicycle kick, and Hero follows with more on the edge of the apron, and Thatcher just won't go down after three of these. So they fight to the floor, into the crowd. Thatcher then catches a boot and a knee bar from the outside of the apron and starts attacking the right leg of Hero inside the ring. They even got into a 50-50 guard position and rolled into the ropes. There's a pile driver by Chris Hero that comes out of nowhere, and he grabs his arm to sell a possible stinger, Thatcher does. And then Thatcher blocks another pile driver. He goes to link hands for the Gotch style pile driver, but that gets blocked. Thatcher then applies an ankle lock. Hero gets to the ropes. They're trading forearms. Thatcher hits a Saito suplex and continues selling the arm from that pile driver spot. They get into a striking exchange. There's a discus elbow by Hero for a two count, a jumping spin kick. Then Thatcher headbutts Chris Hero for a two count. This looked nuts the way they executed it. And then Thatcher goes for the Gotch pile driver. Hero blocks, hits a roaring elbow, a tombstone for a near fall into a Fujiwara armbar. And then Hero rolls out, gets up, and he hits the Hero's welcome. And he beats Thatcher at 18 minutes and 2 seconds. I thought this was the match of the night, WH. And there were a lot of great candidates. I just love this match.
I love this match, too. Like, it just, it's incredible. Like, you know, you have all these people doing stunts. And we can get back, we'll get to that, I suppose, at the end of the show. But, like, these two guys just grappled with each other. They hit each other. And they just went to get the win with each other. Just for the matter of, like, advancing the tournament. But, like, I want to beat you because I'm better than you. So simple. And yet, it's so beautiful. It's a bit more, it's like, that's what wrestling can be. It can be just so beautiful in its simplicity. And I have this kind of love-hate with Chris Hero in the sense, like, I remember him in the indie days where he had the worst gear of all time. And then he got to Ring of Honor. He did the tag team with Claudio, Kings of Wrestling. He went to Trunks. He slimmed down. He got into really good shape. He was Cassius Ohno in NXT. And I thought, this guy's got it going on. I don't know, like, why he's put on so much weight. I think it probably is because of an injury, but he's still wrestling really well for a guy like who's put on that much weight, and he's bigger than he was pre Kings of Wrestling. But I there's something, I love his style, but at the same time I can't get past like he just has a horrible body, you know.
Well, I mean, he was also somebody that, I mean, at his peak, I mean, how big was this guy? You know, CZW days and before that. I mean, this guy was, what, 280 maybe?
Yeah, but pushing he never, 300? But he was never like out of shape like he is now. Like, he kind of like, I don't know, it doesn't work for him. You know what I mean? Like, some people can make being out of shape work, like old school wrestlers like Dusty and Dick Murdoch. I tend to think like maybe Chris Hero wants to be like Dick Murdoch. I don't know, modern day Dick Murdoch. Who knows? He's still a great wrestler. I love watching his matches, but sometimes I just watch and I'm like, God, I can't. It's a cosmetic business, you know. I'll admit I judge people by looks if people don't already know by now. But yeah, it's a great match. I still loved it. I think Timothy Chad Thatcher. I have no idea if he's gonna ever go beyond this, like in America. I think he can find a lot of success in Japan, though. He's got a big career in Japan, I think.
I watch this guy, and to me, it's everything that character in NXT, Simon Gotch, should be trying to replicate, because I think that's kind of the impetus of the character, is the old-school, mat-based wrestler. But Timothy Thatcher is just, to me, at a whole other level. And I hope that he can get out of just simply doing Evolve shows and PWG. There's nothing wrong with that, but there's a certain level you get to, and I think he's right at the cusp of that. And whether it's getting a relationship with a Noah or somewhere in Japan, I don't know if this guy in this kind of form would necessarily translate into WWE, but again, this guy is not somebody that when you're talking about the top unsigned talent out there, he's not a name that instantly comes to mind, but this guy was arguably one of the top three performers on this entire Loaded show.
Definitely, yeah.
So we then go to a non-tournament match with Aerostar and Phoenix taking on Drago and Pentagon Jr. in our Lucha Underground match, and our ring announcer introducing Aerostar.
Aerostar. Fuck! I was like, "What is he French? I don't know. Why is he called Aerostar? Are we saying the chocolate bar completely wrong all these years, John? I don't know. I'm gonna go to the store and get an Aero bar."
Was Melissa Santos's schedule so pressing that she couldn't commit to three nights of PWG in August after night one?
Maybe Roderick Strong just pissed her off too much in that match.
That's true. If you missed that, she certainly gets frazzled in the main event by Roderick Strong. So we have Aerostar and Phoenix taking on Drago and Pentagon Jr., all announced from Mexico.
From Mexico, like there aren't any fucking cities in Mexico. Lazy fucking announcer. Lazy.
This guy was not winning any points. And then on top of that, I mean, there's some announcers that will give their own a pass, not these PWG announcers, because then Chuck Taylor immediately brought up, it kind of reminds me when one guy went from Yoshihiro Tajiri from Yokohama, Japan, to Tajiri from Japan when he went to WWE.
Exactly.
So lots of big stuff in this particular match, including Phoenix starting off by springboarding off the top rope into a somersault as he was tagged in by Aerostar, very fast sequence with Pentagon Jr. They did a double down with simultaneous head kicks. Then Phoenix lifted Aerostar for a gory special, dropping Phoenix onto Drago as Phoenix then leg dropped Pentagon, which was a great double team maneuver. Aerostar then springboarded from the second rope over the top into a Hurricanrana to Pentagon. He did this a few times where he would springboard off the second rope instead of the top into the ring. Pentagon then takes his glove off, tears off the top of Aerostar, and just delivers these brutal overhand chops to Aerostar. There was a big tilt-a-whirl into a DDT by Drago to Phoenix, and then a few minutes later, Phoenix hitting a somersault dive over the top to the floor. Then we saw another lethal injection spot by Phoenix delivered to Pentagon. Pentagon hit this combination gory special and package pile driver to Phoenix and Aerostar as they kicked out of that. Aerostar then splashes off the shoulders of Phoenix from the top to Drago. Phoenix hits a spiral tap to the floor as the announcers lose their mind over this. And then Aerostar hits a tilt-a-whirl into a backstabber to Pentagon, and Phoenix hits the Fire Thunder driver to Drago for the win at 15:44, and the crowd chanting, "Please come back," at the conclusion of the tag match.
Yeah, I love this match because it was completely different from everything we've seen before. And I'm not a huge Lucha fan. There are a lot of things about the style of Lucha. I like the aesthetics of Lucha. I don't like a lot of the trappings and tropes of Lucha, like 2 out of 3 falls, like heel ref, you know technical ref and brutal ref, all that kind of shit. I hate that stuff. But this was an amazing match. Everyone looked good. I gotta say, I love Pentagon Jr.'s look. He's got this mask, but also he wears face paint. It's just this amazing kind of combination. He just came out like looking like a star. Like the way he carried himself in this match, more than anyone else, more than any of the other luchadors in this match, he just came across like, I'm a big fucking deal. I'm awesome. And he, based on this match alone, he is. I thought he was like, Jesus, this guy could have a future ahead of himself. Like if WWE's ever really serious about, you know, getting more Latin talent into their company, you know. I gotta say one thing about the ring announcer again. He announced Phoenix as being representing Team Red, and Chuck Taylor also mentioned this. It's like, but why is he wearing black and green? Like, and then, like, everyone looked at, everyone got this like Captain America shtick going. Drago's got that awesome dragon look. Pentagon Jr., you know, great look. Phoenix, he's wearing lime green, like kind of like these lime green and black baggy pants. I was like, is it 2001 again in wrestling? What the fuck? Dude, upgrade your fucking look. That's all I'm going to say.
At least the ring announcer didn't Bill Phoenix is hailing from Arizona.
I don't think anybody wants to be Bill from hailing from Arizona.
Yeah, this was a really fun Lucha style tag match, and I think the Pentagon Jr., to your point, WH, you could argue that was the biggest star coming out of the first season of Lucha Underground, someone that so many people got into. And AAA, I mean, you know, with the unfortunate passing of Perro Aguayo, a lot is on his shoulders to kind of carry that top heel spot. And with AAA losing Alberto recently and Mystico going leaving the promotion as well, I mean, they kind of have seen a giant change to their roster over the past year, and Pentagon Jr. is one of the major characters in both Lucha Underground and AAA. Did you get to see much of Lucha Underground in the first season, or not that much?
No, like, I just been too busy, like, trying to keep up with Japanese wrestling. But I heard a lot about, like, Lucha Underground, and I catch clips here and there, highlight reels, and like, Pentagon Jr., I've never seen a full match of his until now, but he's just someone that just immediately, to me, was less like, holy shit, this guy's a star. Like, without having known anything else about him from his mainstay stuff in Lucha Underground or AAA, I just, from this match alone and like the first night's match, and then I watched his third night match, he's just like, this guy's fucking amazing. I want to see more of him, you know?
Yeah, and especially that first night where you saw all the Pentagon merchandise just with the crowd. Like, this is somebody that, just a character that you can market so easily with that look and the mask. I mean, just certainly a character that I feel you can build so much around. Then we had the intermission. Chris Hero replaced Chuck Taylor at this point, and we got back to the tournament with Tommy End taking on Drew Gulak. And there was just this constant grappling and clinching at the start of this match. And it ended with End hitting a kick to the chest after 5 minutes. And it was like the first big strike of the match. And they built up to this kick to the chest. Then there was a headbutt to the chest, which sent End down to the floor. They tie up, and End slaps him in the chest. End takes this big slap, misses with a head kick, and catches him with a spinning wheel kick that looked so goddamn great. And instantly into a German suplex to Gulak for a two count. The reaction by Dave Meltzer in the front row said everything about this particular sequence. Then there was a flying knee to Gulak, a lariat to End for a two count, and then fell down with his ankle being injured. There was a low lariat by Gulak, an overhead Saito style suplex that Chris Hero just could not identify and was really just impressed at this suplex and what to even call it. As End gets up, Gulak then walks into an elbow strike by End, and End just wins the match after this elbow at 11 minutes and 47 seconds. And I really like finishes like this, that you're building, but the actual finish is just something very simple, but it makes sense to the actual structure of the match. And this was a weird ending, but it worked for me, I thought.
I was in an elbow, because it looked like just a straight punch to the face from when I watched it. He just like kind of punched him right in the face.
We need an instant replay here on this podcast.
Yeah, but it looked like a flash punch to the face, and I tend to think was that really the finish? Just because like the way End reacted, he didn't react like, oh, I won. Oh, okay. It looked like I actually hit the fucking guy in the face. You know?
Whoops.
I don't know. Who knows? Like, If that was planned, that was the actual planned finish. It's amazing because it came out of nowhere and End sold it like he wasn't expecting to win with that move. But yeah, I really like this match. Drew Gulak, someone who's on my radar just because like he's really kind of that old school, you know, of like he wants to be a wrestler, which is funny because he got his start in CZW and like there's tons of his stuff where he's doing the hardcore stuff. But thank God he's moved away from that. He just wants to become like a wrestler, you know. I'm totally behind this kind of, you know, Gulak, Thatcher, Biff Busick kind of scene like happening in the States. As also like, and then you throw in guys like Zack Sabre Jr. from England into there, and it's like I love the no knee pad move. Let me just say that.
How about Tommy End? What do you think about him? I think he's just got such a fun like K-1 style that is very rare in professional wrestling of someone who can do it at this level because the guy is an actual kickboxer.
It's interesting about Tommy End. I first heard about him like watching some West Side Extreme Wrestling, WXW from Germany, where he got kind of his start. He's a Dutch wrestler. And like I always like the name. I love when you like just put obvious words together, like Tommy and then what's a good name, like the good last name, End. That's great. He has got this, like, he used to be kind of more like a pretty boy when I first saw him. Now he's got the beard, the long hair shaved at the sides. He's got all these tattoos, and he's just, I just love his presence, his style of wrestling, his demeanor, his look. It's great. I think Tommy End has got star also written all over him, just in a completely different way that Pentagon Jr. does. And yeah, he's really good at the, you know, doing the kickboxing stuff and the strikes. For me, this was a kind of reminded me of like kind of like old UFC, original UFC, where it's like the grappler versus the striker. What style's gonna win? And the flash punch to the face is what won. So there you go.
Yeah, it's also interesting to take into account over this three-night tournament, you had representatives from AAA. William Regal was dropping in. I mean, you had a lot of influential people when it comes to scouting. So not only are these guys going out there and performing for this crowd that has their own level of expectation, but also when there's a possible gateway to a major promotion, it becomes very interesting. With Tommy End, I believe within a year this guy's going to be in NXT. I think this guy has the look they want. I think he has a style that could very well translate into that kind of a system, and it'll be a new beginning for Tommy End, which could be his name when he goes to NXT, potentially.
Tommy Beginning?
That'll be it. Thomas Beginning Thomas.
God, I hope not.
Next tournament match was Speedball Mike Bailey and Drew Galloway, with Galloway just towering over this guy, who is a native of Quebec. And the crowd immediately starts chanting, "Dirty, dirty, dirty fucking feet," at Mike Bailey, who does wrestle barefoot. And Galloway is mocking him with the crane pose, either paying homage to Jack Evans or just simply not watching any of the earlier stuff. Bailey hit him with these chops and then a crazy flurry of kicks to the chest that just never ended. A Hurricane Rana sent Galloway to the floor. I'm not going to go through everything here because these two did everything under the sun. Galloway did take control of the match. He was beating down Bailey for a long time, did the blows to the chest a la Sheamus, and then there were a crazy flurry of kicks to the sides and head kick by Bailey. Bailey hit a corkscrew planche off the top to the floor. There was a standing corkscrew moonsault in the ring to Galloway for a two count, and then a big sit-out spinebuster by Galloway as he comes back, getting a near fall. At one point, Galloway just leaned on top of him back first, and Hero just got so pissed at this lazy cover by Drew Galloway and how he could have cost himself the tournament by this lazy cover. Galloway then got crotched as he goes for a superplex, took a knee from Bailey on the top, and then Galloway lifts himself up from the Tree of Woe position, suplexing Bailey off, and hits his running kick, which is called the Claymore in TNA, for a near fall. There were a pair of spinning wheel kicks. Galloway kicked out, lifts Bailey. Bailey comes off with a head kick. Galloway hits a tombstone for a two. There's a shooting star by Bailey where he landed knees first onto Galloway, who is on all fours on the mat. Yet another near fall. They go into more near falls. Galloway then goes for the future shock, and Bailey counters it in midair into a cradle and pins him at 17 minutes and 48 seconds.
Yeah, I'm kind of like torn about this match. On one hand, I gotta admire Galloway for doing a great job of like making it look like a guy who looks like Mike Bailey could hang with him in a combat situation. You know, that's great. That's the great thing about pro wrestling, I suppose. But this is like it's kind of a classic David versus Goliath match. Just the thing about Mike Bailey. Like, I don't know why PWG has such a hard on for this kid. Like, there's things about his style that are fun to watch, but like, it just doesn't work for me. Like the package like this kid presents. First of all, he comes out wearing like his ring attire. His entrance attire is like a fuck gi. It's just like, oh, I just want anytime he gets in the ring with anyone, I just want them to kill him. You know, I don't, just for me, it just comes across as being like, so, I don't know, fucking obnoxious, like you're wearing your fucking gi out there. And then he wrestles barefoot. But the thing is like there's nothing else about him that is, you know, extraordinary. He just looks like a fan, like an out-of-shape fan getting into the ring. An out-of-shape fan who can, like, who knows Taekwondo and, like, can fucking fight. But still, like, I can't believe that Drew Galloway lost to this fucking kid. You know what I mean? And I hate his fucking nickname, Speedball. It's like the Marvel character that started the Civil War, you know, in Marvel Comics. It's like, come on, really? What's this kid?
Yeah, this match, I mean, I don't want to say any of the matches were bad on this show, but this kind of was, this one really didn't hit for me as much as the others. I think that especially the near falls at the end, I found them kind of redundant. I'm fine for matches that kind of build and you're really invested in those near falls. That wasn't the case for me in this particular match. I think that there was an easier story here of kind of playing up the size rather than going kind of 50-50 at the end. I haven't seen enough of Mike Bailey to really have a solid opinion on the guy, but I am very impressed with Drew Galloway when I have seen him post WWE, and someone that's given a lot more latitude when it comes to match layout and going out there. I mean, 3MB, not exactly the highest of markers when it comes to comparison points, but Drew Galloway is someone that I think he was released at a perfect time. I don't think anyone holds his run in WWE too much against him. They don't look at him as some comedy knockoff character. I think he's someone that has really reinvigorated himself on the independent scene. And to be quite honest, I bet you he's making comparable money from all the stuff he's doing overseas, regular with TNA, doing shows throughout the U.S. than he was when he was sporadically getting dates in WWE at the bottom of the card. And I guarantee you he's in a much happier state of mind today than he was a few years back.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, I think people can forget about, like, his character in WWE because, like, the good thing what he did was he just completely reinvented himself, changed his look. He looks nothing like his 3MB character, you know? So you can forget that, oh, that's the guy that was getting, like, a jobber, essentially, to everyone in WWE, just doing nothing. Like, he's got a great presence to him, and, like, he was the thing that I think carried this match for me. Like you're saying, there's too many kickouts. It's just, to me, I hate that because it's just a prostitution of moves and finishes that just kind of brings indie wrestling down a bit. And like, this is the only match that I think was went overboard with like the false finishes and to the point of ridiculousness almost, just because it's like I said, I just can't buy that, like, Mike Bailey's kicking out of all these moves, you know?
Next up was Ricochet, who had won the tournament in 2014, taking on Zack Sabre Jr. It started with this head scissors by Sabre Jr., and any time Ricochet would get out, Zack would just reapply it immediately, and it was just frustrating Ricochet. This was when Hero asked if Austin Grimes is related to Vic Grimes, and Excalibur had to inform him that that joke had already been done tonight, and Chris Hero just had to look down at his notes and just shake his head and say, damn it. There was this constant battle for position. Ricochet is extending both arms back, and Zack is working for a while to escape. The crowd's chanting for a test of strength, which is a first. Then Hero identified this as a cerebral lock by Ricochet, as Sabre kicks his way out of that. Then he went for the people's moonsault, almost landing into a triangle, and the announcers largely just shit on this, in particular Chris Hero, who just thought this was utterly stupid. And he escapes, hits a standing moonsault to Zack, and then pours water onto Zack, which in most cases would be deemed as this heel being so disrespectful, but given the heat in this particular building, it was probably a babyface move, WH.
Probably, yeah. It's quite well known that the Legion Hall is like one of the hottest venues in all of wrestling. I've been in fucking Sumo Hall for the G1 two nights in a row. That's a fucking sweatbox, let me tell you.
Zack hit a Pele kick to the arm and then followed with a dragon suplex. There was a running ace crusher and standing shooting star by Ricochet for a two count. Then a running European uppercut and penalty kick by Zack for a two count. Springboard forearm into an arm bar by Zack, and then he locks the right arm of Ricochet and tries to get the other arm and gets cradled for a two count. Ricochet would counter a Kimura with a Northern Lights and then into a dragon sleeper from his back. There was a Japanese leg roll by Zack and back into the dragon sleeper. Some very great transitions here. Zack then countered a Benadriller into an arm bar attempt. Ricochet deadlifts him, slams Zack. Ricochet goes, hits a 630 splash, only gets a two count, then again goes for the Benadriller, and Zack counters it, gets the arm bar, but then gets up, is Ricochet stomping the face of Zack, as Zack then grabs hold of the wrists and uses a European clutch and catches him for the fall. This went 23 minutes, 23 seconds, and a very different Ricochet match, which I think this guy, if you had only really watched a lot of his Dragon Gate stuff, the guy has really evolved his style quite a lot from just, you know, the high-flying spots into being, I think, much more well-rounded over the last 2 to 3 years.
Yeah, it was an interesting match because, like if you think politically about this match from a Japanese point of view, it's like, you know, Zack Sabre Jr. is a really prominent foreign wrestler in NOAH. Like, he's been there, you know, he's been junior tag champ there. He's one of the more popular foreigners that wrestles in NOAH. And, of course, Ricochet is one of the biggest stars in the last 4 years in Dragon Gate. He's been the Open the Dream Gate champion. And, like, I think him going to New Japan was a big loss for Dragon Gate. But it was interesting watching, okay, NOAH guy versus Dragon Gate guy. And I really liked the fact that Ricochet didn't do a match that you would have expected him to do. He wrestled more of a Zack Sabre Jr. style match. He really wanted to showcase, like, hey, I can wrestle too. I just don't do, like, 450s and shooting star presses from the ground or just do all this high-flying stuff. I can wrestle too. And I think he acquitted himself really well, like, in this match doing grappling with Zack Sabre Jr. I really liked this match. At some point, you said like Zack was doing these European uppercuts. Apparently, in the UK, since they're European, they don't call them European uppercuts.
There's uppercuts?
No, they're called, like Chuck Taylor or Excalibur said, they're called lifters. And then if you watch the rest of the show, they start just calling European uppercuts lifters. They just start adapting that name for European uppercuts. So might be a trend to watch out for on commentary, John, just letting you know.
Okay, well, we'll have our lifter watch on for future shows. I think that this match, you know, none of the combinations of these tournament matches does someone necessarily jump out as, oh, this guy's got to win. But I think this one legitimately people didn't know was Ricochet going to lose. You mentioned the political issue there potentially. I think that there was a lot of intrigue in this particular match going in, and people thought it could go either way here with either the champion from last year. Is he going to get knocked out in the first round? And Zack Sabre Jr., who would ultimately win the tournament. So lots of interesting stuff there as we concluded the tournament matches, and that took us to
I just want to say one thing about the finish of this match is that, like, so, like, you know, those Ricochet and Zack have this great series of reversals, and then, you know, Sabre wins with that bridge. But the thing is like, Austin Grimes, he's got him in the pin, and he's, like, just standing there like a fucking idiot, and it's like, dude, like, get down there. And then he's like, he snaps out of it. Oh, I gotta count this. 1, 2, 3. It's like he had him down for like a 6 count. And I think Zack Sabre knew it because like he kind of like, I think he said something to Austin Grimes. It looked like he said something like, you know, fuck, it took you forever to fucking count that pinfall, the finish of this match. So I want to say, Austin Grimes, just get your shit together, man.
Maybe Austin Grimes got a tip off from the NOAA office and they were like, let's really give it to this guy. Make him look as bad as possible. We want Zack Sabre Jr. to get a 6 count on him.
Could be it. They could have promised him, like, fly him out to Japan, hang out with, like, Shima and Shingo Takagi or something like that.
We'll let you be a young boy here in NOAA for a year, and we'll give you one night out in Roppongi, courtesy of our sponsors, Austin Grimes. You will never be thought of as the second Grimes in professional wrestling after this.
That's right, exactly.
Main event time, Guerrilla Warfare match. It was the Young Bucks and the returning Super Dragon, who had not had a match since 2012, as WH mentioned, one of the founding members of PWG, taking on Biff Busick, Andrew Everett, and Trevor Lee. They had done a big angle with Super Dragon's return and aligning himself with the Young Bucks and Roderick Strong and forming Mount Rushmore 2.0 to lead to this particular match, and they would very much play off the history in this match, in particular with Excalibur on commentary. This match was a hardcore match to the nth degree. This was just a hardcore match on steroids. There was so much stuff in this particular match that I'm not going to go through all of it because it was just constant action involving all six. I thought they did pace it well. It never got to be too overwhelming. Early on, there was this spot where someone had a two sweet foam fingers that they handed off to Nick Jackson, who hit Trevor Lee with the foam fingers and then inside revealed that there was a wrench inside of the foam fingers as Trevor Lee was selling this foam finger shot. They then brought out a ton of weapons here. There was a trash can hit to Nick's head after a running kick from Lee off the apron. Matt comes into the ring. They super kick Austin Grimes and then Rick Knox, eliminating the referees from the match for now. And then Super Dragon curb stomps Rick Knox and then starts making a mannerism as if to a jerk off onto the head of Rick Knox. Just uncalled for action. This is a heel maneuver in PWG in 2015.
Well, the thing is like, you know, he can do all the heel stuff he wants, but the thing is like Super Dragon is like a PWG legend. Like they love everything he does, and it's, you know, if they ever boo him, it's just to be polite fans and like, okay, we got to play into his character. I gotta say, this is probably my least favorite match on this show. I give them credit. Like, I thought a lot of the action was crisp, and they were able to still tell a story, but I was just numbed after this match was done, just because, like, there's you say there's so much stuff, I think there's too much stuff. It just became a thing of, like, I'm gonna do this to you. I'm gonna jump off the top rope and like, they had, like, I think they had Busick's head on two chairs, and then fucking Super Dragon, like, jumps off the top rope and double stomps his head through the chairs. They put the Air
thumb
Jordan
tacks.
With thumbtacks on them and do the super kick party like that. I was just like, this is ridiculous. This is like everything I ever hated about, like, ECW in this match.
Yeah, they then put the tacks onto the chair with Busick's head on top of the tacks on the chair, and then did a stomp off the top.
You know what kills me is, like, they don't need to do that stuff. They could just have a regular six-man tag, like, not guerrilla warfare match. I know that's, like, their kind of, like, apex, like, that's the end of the feud, but it's not. It's actually the beginning of a feud. So I didn't understand why they booked it as, like, a no-holds-barred match. I think if they just had a regular six-man tag with, like, you know, you had the tag rules in effect, I think it would have been a much more enjoyable match for me. Like, I don't know what other people think about this particular match. I do admire that they did tell us, they were able to consistently tell a story throughout it, but just, there's too much stuff. In this day and age, John, in, like, 2015, we don't need, like, super hardcore matches anymore. We really don't.
Yeah, I feel that if you are a fan of these, then this was a great match by that standard. They're not my cup of tea in professional wrestling, but they did, yeah, some insane stuff throughout this. There was one great shot, and PWG, I mean, on the production end, I mean, it's rather bare bones, but there was this great shot from the announce desk where you're seeing it from the point of view of Hero and Excalibur as Matt Jackson and Super Dragon are approaching them, and then out of nowhere, Trevor Lee, who they had already said was hiding out by the announce desk, dives over Excalibur, over the desk to the floor, and I thought it was shot tremendously well. It was a surprise spot, but you all of a sudden remember that Trevor Lee was hiding out there. That was something unique.
Yeah, that was great. I love that particular spot. Just like Trevor Lee got such great motion on that dive, and the cameraman, just incredible, either talent or luck, he captured that perfectly. But it's one of those things, the spots they put on the trailer for this night on their website to kind of sell, like, this DVD, which they should. So it wasn't a surprise to me. I remembered, like, that from the trailer, and I thought, oh, okay, this is where he's gonna set up that dive I saw in the preview of this match, of this DVD.
They also did a spot where the referee Rick Knox got his own comeback with super kicks to the Bucks, then a lariat to Super Dragon, and then hit a somersault dive to the Bucks on the floor before they killed him again with a pair of double super kicks on the floor. And the finish was just the utter destruction of Biff Busick, who is another guy that has recently joined WWE, where they did the spot I mentioned, stomping him onto the chair with the thumbtacks underneath, and then hitting a psycho Meltzer driver to pin him 16 minutes and 40 seconds, and the crowd's chanting, Super Dragon, fuck you, Dragon. And it was the post-match that was almost as long as the actual match, where Excalibur gets into the ring after Rushmore has left the ring, thanks everyone for coming, says, it's just utter silence at this point, as he says, it's not over, Mount Rushmore is bullshit, the crowd is chanting one more match, and says that Mount Rushmore are only four men, they have an entire locker room and are not going to rest until they put them into the ground. The Bucks run back out, and they super kick Excalibur, with Dragon also returning. They hit a psycho driver onto the chair, and then they stare down Chris Hero, and he charges at them. Someone is yelling at Chris Hero, which would come into play afterwards. Hero goes up to him, and the guy is saying how this is Super Dragon's house, and then the Bucks and Dragon return. They attack Hero. He goes down from two super kicks after he hit two roaring elbows. He's down. The crowd is chanting for Thatcher, for Tommy End, and it ends the show with the Bucks telling the crowd to suck it, and we go off the air. And that was the conclusion of night two.
Yeah, I've seen, like, who they get to fight Mount Rushmore on night three, and I'm I'm gonna say it's quite anticlimactic. I won't. You can review it later, like, you know, whoever ends up reviewing it. But I was like, okay, who are they gonna get? Oh, okay.
Austin Grimes.
If only Austin Grimes, Rick Knox, returning Scott Lost, and Candice LeRae. That's who they get to fight all of Mount Rushmore 2.0. No. It's just, to me, like, go see it. I haven't watched the actual match. I just, like, saw who they get. Because I was interested. Who are they going to get? And I was just like, oh, okay. Never mind.
Well, if there's anyone that knows how to push a DVD sale, it's WH Park with that tease.
Just being honest, that's all I'm saying.
So, WH, we usually rank these shows out of a score of 10. Where is night 2 landing for you, and was it a better show for you than night 1?
I'm going to say it's a 7. Was it a better night? No, I really liked night 1 a lot. You know, like, I liked a lot of the tournament matches, but I thought the 6-man with, like, Tommy End, Marty Scurll, and Zack Sabre Jr., was way better than this match against, like, Mount Rushmore 2.0. It's just much better, like, wrestling match, and it didn't numb me. I was engrossed. I was entertained by, like, that multi-man tag match more than this one. So this had better, I think, tournament matches. The Hero Thatcher, the End Gulak, and the Zack Sabre Jr. Ricochet match are the standouts for me. But, like, just the main event from night 1 was way, way, way better.
I would give this show an 8 out of 10. I thought it was a very solid show. My match of the night was Thatcher and Chris Hero. I loved that match. I just thought it was outstanding. Was that your pick for match of the show, or was something else?
You know what? The three matches I mentioned that were highlights for me, it's hard for me to, like, pick which one I liked the most. But I'm going to say, just for, like, consistent, like, storytelling, I'm gonna agree with you and say Hero and Thatcher was probably the best match on night 2.
All right. Well, that's gonna wrap up the review portion. We're gonna say goodbye to WH at this point. But before we go, WH, I know you and Chris are gonna be back in the next little while with your year-end show, going over all your picks to end off the year for 2015. But a big story over the past week or so has been the health of AJ Styles. What do you think is this to me is a crossroads for AJ Styles in his career at this point, because I think he's going to have to alter his style somewhat. I think he's going to have to look at what he wants to do, whether it be New Japan, and limiting a lot of his outside dates in order to rest up for some of these tours. But it's very concerning when you're hearing that this guy can barely move. He's missing a lot of tournament matches, and there's grave concern he won't be available for the ROH pay-per-view, and more so the Nakamura match in January.
It's really, like, disheartening for me, because I think, like, 2015 and, like, even 2014 were, like, amazing years for him. Like, not just in Japan, but, like, all the stuff he was doing in the American Indies and going to Europe as well. I think he has to change his style. I think he has to tone down the high flying and be more mat based. And he can do it. Like, his psychology is just so amazing. As long as he has a styles clash, which is, I'm sure, doesn't tax his back that much. But I think a lot of the springboard stuff he does has got to go. And I think he's got to limit his dates as well. Like, I don't think he should be doing so many indie dates. Because, like, he just goes all out on every show he does. Doesn't matter if there's, like, 100 people in the crowd or 10,000. Like, I've seen matches where he's, like, you know, wrestling for some small, really small promotion, maybe in like, Memphis or something like that, and he's just tearing it up, like, just going full tilt. It's just like, dude, save it. But he's not like that. But, you know, for his sake, if he wants to get into, like, another 3 to 5 years out of this business, especially if he wants to kind of cement his legacy in Japan, which is what I imagine he wants to do. He's got to, like, tone it down. I hope his match with Nakamura isn't off. That's the kind of match, that's the match I'm kind of really looking forward to, because I think that's the match where he's gonna beat Nakamura. I think he's gonna become the IC champ. I think what he can do with that belt and what he can do for himself as a character in New Japan in the next year can potentially be really amazing and really draw fans to really kind of openly cheer him as much as they want to, you know? So we'll see. I agree. I think he has to tone down his style.
All right, that's going to do it for the review. You can always follow WH Park and the number 9 on Twitter. And every month he is here with Chris Charlton on Japanese Audio Wrestling. And I want to thank you very much for hopping on, doing the review with us, WH.
Oh, thank being you, John.
It's always great chatting with you, a PWG authority, no less. And we'll definitely do this again sometime in the near future.
Looking forward to it, John.
Where is, what's the referee's name again?
Austin Grimes.
Austin Grimes. Where's he from?
Southern California.
He's not from Northern California?
Maybe.
No relation to Jake Grimes?
We already made that joke, Chuck and I. And I actually,
well, this was actually, I was actually curious.
Went so far as to calling him, Ice Pick Vic Caprio one time.
Oh, okay. Oh, man. Oh, buries his face at the back.
Thank you again to WH Park for joining us on this week's Review Away. We're going to get into your feedback now for the PWG Battle of Los Angeles Stage 2 event from this past August. Want to thank all of you for your feedback that you've provided. And if you are so inclined to go and watch this particular show, you can order it through High Spots. All right, let's go to the feedback. And Christian Small writes in, "This was easily my favorite stage out of the three. Felt both non-tournament matches were a ton of fun, and the tournament matches were just outstanding. This was my first time seeing Timothy Thatcher, and boy, have I missed out. He was great and has a brutal-looking style of work. I gained a new appreciation for Jack Evans, who has really taken to this heel character. Bit of a shame his in-ring work doesn't match it. I always enjoy watching Zack Sabre Jr. dissect a guy's arm in his matches. It's just something about his style that is incredible to watch, and felt he worked really well with Ricochet. Finally, I thought that Mike Bailey had a star-making performance in this match with Galloway. I'm also very interested in hearing WH's opinion on Bailey's dress style," which we did go over. "He may be a great worker, but he looks like a little kid who's been dropped off to karate practice. My only problem with this show is the post-main event angle. Felt it dragged a little long. Putting the focus on Super Dragon is a mistake, I feel. The guy comes and goes very quickly in PWG. His last run, he won the tag titles with Steen and disappeared after suffering an injury to reappear years later. Besides this, I cannot find much to fault on the show and give it 9 out of 10. That was certainly, I mean, that is being played to the longtime PWG audience. And I mean, Super Dragon, a huge part of that history as one of the founders. And to that crowd, they know who Super Dragon is. He's an integral figure in the entire chronology of PWG. And I didn't mind the show ending angle. I think it did leave you with that anticipation of who was going to represent PWG against Mount Rushmore. You would find that out afterwards. And I thought it was the rare case of a show that it did go off with an angle, which typically for an independent show like this, you're not always going to see a heavy emphasis on angles because a lot of people just kind of view them in kind of existing in itself and not booking show to show. And that was something to give you a hook to come back for. Jacob from Los Angeles. "I've been begging for this review since August. I waited 5 hours in the 100-degree Reseda weather, but it was all worth it to catch a close seat to a truly special show. With Dave Meltzer in front of me and Victoria 3 seats to the left, this felt like being a part of indie wrestling history. A completely stacked show with 7 countries represented and the best American, Mexican, and European wrestlers going today. Easily the best wrestling show I've ever attended. The one knock I have against this show was the Evans and Helico match. I was expecting a match of the night contender and was disappointed by all the comedy. Evans was a great cocky heel, but it slowly started dragging. The DVDs miss out on some moments that truly make the PWG live experience. The entrances are understandable with the crowd singing along to Brass Monkey for Speedball or Pennywise for Biff, but the best moment of the night happened right after the Lucha tag match. As the crowd was giving it a standing ovation, a fan threw a dollar into the ring, a tradition in Mexico, but soon someone else decided to throw money. Within minutes, money was flying over my head, and the ring became littered with dollar bills. The luchadors gathered all the bills into the middle of the ring and embraced each other over the high reception from the American fans. Phoenix then gave a speech on sacrificing and paying their dues in Mexico to get to that night in Reseda, a visibly emotional moment for everyone in that building. My favorite match of the night, although more than half the card, is stellar. I give this show 10 Pentagon chops out of 10. This is the best overall wrestling show of 2015 and will satisfy any fan's taste. From comedy and hardcore to technical and lucha, this is the highlight reel for the best that today's independent wrestling has to offer." And I agree that that sounds incredible, that post-match for the Lucha tag involving all the dollar bills being thrown in. Not quite sure why they would have not included that on the DVD. That that sounds very cool, something you would want to see. And then he does give us warning about stage three, which is a 4+ hour show. And as we've said, we'll see if we get to stage three. I definitely will review more PWG in the future. I really love watching these shows. They're very easy to watch, never dragging. And we might just move on to another show. I don't know if we'll go to night three. It's just that's a very lengthy show to watch. And I know, boohoo, you have to watch wrestling. It's just, it's more or less finding the time to do it, on top of everything else. And that's, watching these shows, it's a major time commitment every week to just, carve out some time to actually watch some of these shows. So a 5-hour show or so might be a little tough. Next up is Jonas from Hamilton. Man, what a show. Obviously, the in-ring work was top-notch, and PWG crowds was what it was. Sabre Jr. is probably the best wrestler in the world, not in WWE or New Japan. None of that needs any more ball washing. We all know PWG is awesome wrestling, and the crowd is a massive smark circle jerk. Well, what a lovely description, Jonas. I just wanted to comment on the Angelico Evans match. What a fucking shame that match was. Two amazing in-ring talents, but that match is everything that's wrong with indie wrestling, in my opinion. Overselling, circus moves, crowd pandering. I swear to God, I might actually hate Jack Evans. The Jackie Chan drunken master spot almost made me turn the whole show off. I was cringing so hard. I'm happy I didn't, because the rest of the card was amazing, especially Guerrilla Warfare and Saber Ricochet. 7 out of 10 show, 9 out of 10 without the aforementioned match. What's the word on Zack Sabre Jr.? I know that he has left Pro Wrestling NOAH. Is he a free agent, for lack of a better phrase? I'd imagine that WWE must be salivating to get that guy into NXT. No destination as of yet for Zack Sabre Jr., other than he recently did finish up his commitments with Pro Wrestling NOAH and theoretically would be a free agent heading into 2016. I truly believe that TNA, with the support that they do have, in particular in the UK, and they do have a very good television deal there, I think that with all of this UK talent, I'm not saying that you could just uproot yourself and move over to England, but I think that there's a lot of that talent that they could take a lot of this talent and utilize in such a way, because there are a limited amount of spots for guys in NXT. You, the listener, and I could probably rattle off 25 names that could work in the NXT system, but we know that 25 developmental deals are not going to be offered. As much as NXT is expanding, they're touring more, that's just not feasible. There's not going to be roles for everybody. Now, TNA, certainly there are some financial limitations that they are experiencing at this moment, but I feel that as TNA evolves, I think they have to find an identity, move forward with it, and the idea of being this place that maybe it's an open door policy, that we're not going to have people that are coming in and signing exclusive deals. They're going to come and go. You don't know who you're going to see on a weekly basis. There's the talent out there, and it's one avenue to go. And if I'm TNA, I have to look at my fan base is probably watching PWG, is probably watching Progress, is probably aware of a lot of these names. Maybe they just don't get an outlet. Maybe they've heard of these names and just haven't got to see them. And we can provide that platform for a lot of these Zack Sabre Jr. styles, or anybody that has a name value to them at a core level, and bring them over. Now, the counter argument to that is, look at Grado. Look how immensely popular this guy is in ICW and what he has done there, and what has been capitalized on that in TNA. It's two completely different performers, and one that just has not been able to connect in TNA. And you see, he can get over. That's not a debate in however you want to look at this guy being a comedy wrestler, his look, anything. The fact is, it works in one place and it's not working in the other. So that's another whole can of worms to look at, and a very long answer from myself. But Zack Sabre Jr., could he go to NXT? Certainly possible. I don't think that their vision of what talent can fit in their system, I think it is wider now than it's ever been. And this is the same company that just a few years ago, they were saying no to Ricochet. They said no to Davey Richards. They said no to Eddie Edwards. Today, I don't know if that would necessarily be the case for either three of those particular performers. And as Zack Sabre Jr., I'm certain that guy is on their radar. Alex from Medicine Lake. I thought this was a good show and much better than Night One. I still can't figure out why PWG is so revered by wrestling fans. I really enjoy Trevor Lee, and it's pure shock that WWE hasn't made any contention to sign him, as I feel he is an underrated talent. Even though people like Dave Meltzer say that Ricochet is better than Neville, I think Ricochet would need the right character to get over in the WWE. That could be said for anybody. No one is going to come in as strictly a high flyer, and that's going to fly in WWE. Pardon the obvious pun. Everyone's going to have to make transitions. And let's tie this into the Angelico-Jack Evans match. Certainly, I said this with WH, it was going to be the most polarizing match on the entire show. However, look at all of the different guys that we have seen go into the WWE system that have headlined in places like Dragon Gate, that have headlined in Ring of Honor, and worked in Evolve. And they come in, and amazingly, so many of these guys, they have characters, and they can talk, and they have confidence because they've gotten over elsewhere, and they're coming in as if they have this mentality that the WWE is going to benefit from me, and not I am just happy to be here. That's a kind of confidence that so many performers need to have, and it can disappear. And what the building blocks of that are guys that go out on shows like this and they take chances and they experiment with things. And Jack Evans went out and yeah, him and Angelico could have just torn the house down with all of their high flying. They decided to do something very different in their match that no one else on the show was going to do. And look at all the comments we got just on that match. I'm not saying positive or negative. It's certainly they tried to stand out, and I am much more confident in seeing guys go out there to take risks, and maybe it fails, but they take those risks and they're learning week to week, weekend to weekend, city to city, promotion to promotion, what works, and trying to add as many different tools to their tool chest that they can pull out, and working all across the world so that when they finally get to a place like NXT, they're ready for that. It is not jarring to walk in front of that audience, to walk in front of talent evaluators, to go on to Raw and know that they have the ability to get over. And part of that is going out and experimenting and gaining that confidence and learning what doesn't work. So I'm never going to knock guys that try to be different, and they can learn from things. And I'm not even saying that in Angelico and Evans, it was all necessarily bad. They tried something different. I thought the match went a bit too long at 17 minutes, but they were trying to do something different on a show that's loaded with some of the best wrestling in the world, all under one roof. And you're trying to carve out your focus that the audience leaves with. Let us continue. Rory from Dundee, Scotland. Probably the best overall show from the incredible Battle of Los Angeles, though Stage 3, Disc 1 is probably my favorite section of the show. So we have broken up the discs for Stage 3. One advantage I feel Stage 2 had over 1 is the diversity of the matches. Stage 1 was great, but featured a lot of high flyers and perhaps too many reverse Hurricanranas. Yes, I think there was only one on Stage 2. Night 2 featured more matches that were stylistically different, like Thatcher Hero, the main event, Bayley Galloway, and whatever the hell Evans and Angelico was. I must comment on the Lucha tag. How anyone can grade that match in pure star ratings terms is beyond me. In logic terms, it's an awful match, but it's also a spectacle like nothing I've seen before. Thanks, guys. Love the show. Hope WH makes a cameo in the new Zoolander movie. His fashion advice is sorely needed. Rob from Saskatoon is our final piece of feedback. The show started off slow but picked up in a big way, starting with Hero and Thatcher. The Lucha tag match was exactly what works in front of the Reseda crowd. As Rory said, logically it made zero sense, but I find it hard to believe there's anyone who was not entertained by that. Not a huge fan of Drew Gulak, but that match worked as a nice bathroom break following the Lucha tag. Tommy End deserved better than the match was. Mike Bailey could very easily be the PWG Wrestler of the Year. He has perfected the spunky underdog role, and the crowd eats it up. I had such ridiculous high expectations for Ricochet and Sabre going in, and they managed to meet them. Everybody knows Ricochet is this great high-flying wrestler, but he more than held his own against the technical prowess of Zack. And the bridging prawn hold pin is the coolest-looking move in wrestling. The main event for the show was actually planned all the way back in 2013. It was penciled in as Mount Rushmore version 1 versus a returning babyface Super Dragon with Drake Younger, Candice LeRae, and Joey Ryan. Obviously, with people getting exclusive contracts elsewhere, plans changed. I would argue this is an improvement. I won't say this is the best match I have ever seen, but it is my favorite match that I have seen in a long, long time. And while PWG isn't known for long-term storylines, the post-match stuff made you want to see what happens next as soon as possible. a 9 out of 10 show from Rob in Saskatoon. So thanks, folks, for your feedback. You can always leave it at lawradio.proboards.com. Free to sign up, chat with all of our listeners on a daily basis. And as well, we don't mention this enough, but our archives are all up there. Just about every single Review Away, Review a Raw, Review an Impact, all of our current shows, The Law, old interviews, tons of stuff up there that you can go check out. And also, I do want to thank all of you that have recently posted ratings on iTunes for Live Audio Wrestling. We very much appreciate that. Your feedback, it very much helps with the placement of the show and just more people having exposure to our show. We're obviously trying to get it out there to as many people as possible. For those that have left positive feedback, we very much appreciate that. And that is almost going to bring an end to the show, but I do want to mention that come this Christmas, it's become an annual tradition for our Review Away Christmas show, which will be released on Christmas morning. As per usual, this year it is on a Friday. So that means we will not have a traditional review that Wednesday. Instead, the Christmas show, which is always a loaded show with many surprise guests and other elements, that will be coming out Christmas morning, December the 25th for you folks, and we will be going by the Eastern time zone of Christmas morning. So we have put up a thread that is on the Law message board, and we are doing our Christmas jingles contest, where we're asking you, the listener, to compose a Christmas slash wrestling themed jingle or song. These have always been really fun for me and Wade to go through, and we will go through them on the Christmas show. We're asking you to keep them to 2 minutes if possible, and then post it, whether it be on YouTube, SoundCloud, and then post a link to the song up in the thread so we have them all in one place. And then on the Christmas show, Wei and I will go through all of them. Oh, and that is not our first entry, by the way. And we are going to have many guests on the show, some surprises we're working on. That's always a fun show to do with myself and Wei. So that will be coming out Christmas morning. The deadline for the Christmas jingle contest is Monday, December the 21st at noon Eastern time. So submit it there. We will keep it stickied up on the thread throughout December 21st. That's going to wrap up the show. But once again, I want to thank W.H. Park, who filled in this week for Wei Ting. Wei will be back next week, and it was actually his pick for this review next week. As everybody knows, next week, a little movie named Star Wars is coming out. So what can we do to prepare for the release of Star Wars but to go back and review what was always the big event that World Class Championship Wrestling would build up to, that being their Star Wars events. They would do a number of these Star Wars events every year, and we are going to review the December 25th, 1985 Christmas Star Wars show from World Class Championship Wrestling. It is a simple search on YouTube. Just look for World Class Championship Wrestling Christmas Star Wars 1985. The entire 90-minute show is up there on YouTube, and we will review Star Wars, the wrestling version, next week when Wei Ting returns on Review Away. I actually was recently found the old Heroes of World Class Championship Wrestling documentary that Brian Harrison put together in 2006, and ended up watching this entire thing, which I have not watched in years. This is a 3-hour documentary on the history of World Class, so I've certainly got World Class on my brain. It is the most fascinating promotion for me to go back and always read about, learn about, and just look at the legacy, both positive and negative, and there's equal amounts of both to that particular promotion. So we'll be talking a lot about World Class next week. And 1985 was still at a time when this was after the death of David Von Erich in 1982, and this was before the death of their brother Mike Von Erich, and then following that, Chris Von Erich. So at a time when World Class, it was still, I won't say right at their peak point, but 82 to 85 were, that was the period of the hot years with the Freebirds, with the Von Erich brothers, and this was also at a time when they had introduced
cousin Lance Von Erich, the fake Von Erich. So he is a part of this Christmas Star Wars show as well. Looking forward to going back and watching this particular event. So that is happening on Review Away next week. All of our regular shows are up at liveaudiowrestling.com. Later on this week, you'll be able to hear Bauer and Pollock coming up on Wednesday evening. Then on Thursday, new edition of What's Next with Jason Agnew and Braden Harrington. The MMA report this week, I'll be chatting extensively about UFC 194. Max Holloway is going to be on the program with me as he is discussing his fight with Jeremy Stevens on the main card of the pay-per-view, and a big look at this weekend's big event with two title fights from Las Vegas. And then Sunday night on The Law, it's a full review of TLC with Jason Agnew, Dan Lavransky, Dave Meltzer will be on the show. All of that, liveaudiowrestling.com. You can subscribe for free on iTunes, and we'll chat with you next week on Review Away.
All of you guys sit here and you cheer me now. But I ran each and every comment for the past 15 years of my career. So I know you're all full of shit. So when I win the 2015 Bullet, that trophy is going to be a symbol that your shitty opinions mean exactly that. Shit. Just hype up whoever the next guy tells you is the best. You have no free thinking, you have no cognitive ability to do anything other than drink, shit, piss, bitch on the internet, that's your bum bitching, jack off to toot the wall.